The next number by Rovix is called 116 Degrees, and he comments, there is a heat dome over Portland, Oregon, and the temperature hits 116 degrees Fahrenheit.
Of course, the constant backdrop for all of these events in the world, not just the backdrop, but also very much in the foreground, an increasing amount of the time, is human-caused climate chaos, the ever-worsening climate catastrophe that capitalism is constantly exacerbating that we humans are all living through. In the summer of 2021, it was 116 degrees Fahrenheit, 47 Celsius, in Portland, Oregon, and I was sitting in the very living room I'm sitting in now, looking at the thermometer at the time. The previous fall, in the midst of the pandemic lockdowns and the nightly mini-riots downtown, what was supposed to be a heat wave was a chilly day here in Portland, as it happened, because huge forest fires were raging so close to the city that the black smoke that passed for air that week was thoroughly blocking out the sun. The air quality index in Portland was over 500 when I finally got around to evacuating myself and my family to the coast. Not only did capitalism cause this crisis in the first place, but it is demonstrating itself to be completely unable to stop worsening the crisis. The system that is entirely based on bringing in more profits for the shareholders can only put out nice-sounding PR about things. It can't actually change the basic modus operandi. Although that is exactly what needs to happen, pronto, yesterday.
That there's a famine in Tigray. Fires are burning in Flagstaff, blocking out the day. The wind blows so fiercely, the grass is turning brown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. Spas and churches dripping with blood. A tower collapsed in Miami, damaged from a flood. Before the summer's over, who knows how many will drown? It's 116 degrees in Portland town. Prices of houses are rising like never before, along with ocean waters as the temperatures soar. The developers develop, water tables go down. It's 116 degrees in Portland. They're discussing infrastructure. Whether it should be built to withstand fire, they're not sure. They found a dead man in an RV wearing a thorny crown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. Outside the motel, a man was flipping out. He called 911 to tell them about his need for mental health care, so they came and shot him down. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. Don't know where we're going, what kind of shit's in store. I know I'm not the first to feel like I'm knocking on the door of either a new dystopia or a movement of renown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. In the farms in the valley, they're out picking cherries, dropping dead on the field with a bucket of berries. City of bridges, each one like a frown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. No way out, even north of the border. Welcome to the new world order, produced by criminal corporate clowns. It's 116 degrees in Portland.
Hey, well, today is the 20th of June at 2025, and I'm with Salinas and, national, you might even say international activist Wes White, though I don't want this to go to your head there, Wes. You do a lot of postings on a lot of subjects on Facebook, which I've always find difficult to deal with, Facebook. But you know, I've enjoyed some of your postings. But you sent out a message on Signal today that there was a new song, commemorating or describing Salinas activist Rita Acosta?
And I guess I'm sharing it right now on some more Facebook groups, your favorite nemesis. Mm. But it's pretty cool, actually. I mean, I heard it a couple months ago. It definitely made me cry because it's very true. I'm posting the lyrics along with it so you can read along and sing along.
That sounds good. And I know people can get there by going to John Doe 13K on the YouTube channel. Again, J-O-H-N, first word, capital D-O-E, and then 13K, the second word. And you can find it prominently posted.
Yeah, the title is called Scoot Scootin', I'm not sure. Honestly, I do not know the title of the song. It was written by a person named V. And that's all I know.
Well, tell me a little bit about Rita first. Give us some background for those. You've mentioned her before, of course, numerous times, but background us, maybe.
Okay, so Rita actually was a mother of five, is still a mother of five, but she was going through a divorce in like 2010 or so, 2011. And she faced going on the street. She couldn't move in, with her family because they were also on fixed income. So there was really no room. She had two dogs, and so she just had to stay outside. You know, surely there's services. Surely there's something. And the more that she knocks, the more she finds. It's just a grotesque lifestyle. There are not services on purpose. So she kind of started a contract with 40 people making tents by the garden and brought the flush program. Personal hygiene lets us stay human. And so she brought a porta potty in, and folks minded it. They signed a contract, to keep everything nice. They even cleared the streets, to appease.
When and where was this?
This was in Chinatown, 2011 to 12, I think.
Okay, and how long did that community survive?
From January to January.
And what has happened to that community, as far as you know? Although you've often told me that you don't, people kind of go through homelessness and they come out of it, and they go on to better, or should we say, more comfortable in some ways lives. But any sense of graduates from that program or contacts, people who were in the program?
Well, I mean, she wrote a book about it, Make a Difference. Make a Difference. and in there, like, at least half of the folks that are pictured have passed.
Uh-huh. And these are people who were 20 years younger than usual, as sometimes happens, or actually statistically
happens? Probably about 15 years ago, yeah.
And 14. So are most of them... But there are some who are still around, or presumably somewhere still around.
Right? Yes.
And so,
yeah,
so
she can regression rooms go there. I don't know where most folks have gone. But
Rita wrote a book. Did she move indoors shortly after this tents in the garden? Or because I understand she's been an actor.
No. The tents by the garden, and then she did another thing where a hotel let her run a program for elderly and infirmed. And the city shut that down prominently also in the following January. She's run a transitional housing apartment complex and for about a year or so. And then she was back out in the street. That's when I met her.
What year was that, Wes, when you met her?
I met her in 2015.
And when that was, you began to organize, and what became your involvement with the California Union of the Homeless?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And she also involved herself in that, or?
Well, I mean, she was living outside, so her and a few friends were in Chinatown and still trying to have a vestige of somewhere to be safe, especially women. And they were doing sweeps, and the city was passing the storage of personal property on city property. And I'd only been paying the city council about nickel and diming and you know, mismanagement, well, purposeful mismanagement of funds. So I was constantly arguing about contracts, and then I noticed the, you know, they were actually attacking people. So I joined a lawsuit with Anthony Prince, and Jose Castaneda was not on the lawsuit, but he was a council member who had lots of connection to the Poor People's Campaign. Which brought Anthony Prince over, and so like six plaintiffs filed a lawsuit against the city, and I joined in that doing like investigative evidence gathering, you know.
And was Rita a part of this lawsuit at that time?
No, she was just living outside struggling to support.
And has she been involved actively as a Union of the Homeless organizer, or has she simply been independent, working on her own on that, in that issue?
Yeah, well, she had already kind of had a reputation for being there for people, and you know, always supportive, just like a parent. And so she certainly had, you know, everybody knew each other, and in Chinatown those days, like you couldn't hardly sleep on the sidewalk, let alone have a blanket or a tent or anything, you know, when she first started out in 2011.
And did those conditions improve as a consequence of her involvement?
Yes, yeah, because she proved the point that, you know, I mean, you just have to talk to people. Is, you know, I mean, the real problem is just you can't afford rent. But folks tended their own place and even cleaned up around themselves and did everything they could to appease the authorities.
Did this change police practice in 2011, 2012 when she did this?
It did for 11 months or
what,
so.
What changed it back as far as you can judge?
Well, they couldn't stand it. The city just couldn't stand it. They claimed there was lead deposits in the soil, and so therefore, you know, for your own health, we need to kick you back out in the street so we can take everything you got.
So I know that I've met Rita, I believe, a couple times, but I remember the most recent thing I remember about her was the struggle for the Pajaro River encampment with Monica, correct. Monica, full name is?
Tone.
Monica Tone, correct. And that involved also escaping to the Santa Cruz County Watsonville side of the river and then fighting there to establish a beachhead, so to speak.
You know. At Lot 18.
And Lot 18. Is that right, Lot 18?
Yeah, I think so. The city property, because they got kicked out of Monterey County, so they went to Santa Cruz County. You know, I mean, they tried Watsonville at Loco Park. That didn't work, so they went to Santa Cruz County. They got kicked out of there, not even hardly, and I videoed a lot of this, you know, transition and confrontations or you know, at least interactions. And then we hold up, and really, you know, the community of Pajaro Rising was the main backbone of a lot of that, you know, and it's community support. It was the ultimate, you know, support out of that, because they paid for a lot of things. You know, the plastic sheeting, they kind of created a fencing, and then, you know.
By the community, you mean private donations from what people in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties?
Yes.
Now, I know we began by talking about Rita Acosta on this song commemorating her. Do you, any way you can play it on the, I know people can go to it by going to John,
sure.
Go 13K, but you want to play a little of it, although it'll be a bit distorted, but folks can get the idea of the, whether it's catchy or not, you know.
All right. Well, I think it ought to come in pretty good.
All right.
Okay.
Today, actually.
Really? Your mother's birthing day?
Yeah, we just couldn't stay in no longer.
Congratulations to your mom, and a salute to you, sir.
Breathing is a difficult task sometimes.
If you get over here, a hamburger is yours in celebration, if you wish.
Oh, fantastic. I'll take you up on it.
We'll call it a rain check in case, if and when you get here, so. So what's happening, if anything, in, the national news, of course, began with people's resistance to ICE in the L.A. area particularly, and then the arrival of the National Guard and the federalization of it, as well as the Marines, and continuing ICE raids. I guess I'm more interested in the resistance, but also in the oppression. If it's going on in Monterey County,
I have noticed. I saw a couple of videos where ICE was picking up folks living outside, and just going, "Oh, you don't speak English? Well, you come with me," and that was it. You know, so it's certainly it's already in the state.
If you actually can catch those videos, by the way, capture them and send them to me, I'd like to make sure we have that, because it's always good to get specific about where it's happening, when it's happening, as far as we know, you know. That sort of thing.
Okay. Well, it's on one of my Facebook posts from a couple of days ago, which means, you know, a good 50 posts back or so.
I think that may be where I saw it, where my memory of it is coming from. What about the resistance? Is there a YAR kind of thing going on over there, an organized resistance?
I did see, like, they had mariachi bands over at the hotels, just driving them nuts through the night, not letting them sleep. I saw that the ICE came out in construction vests, you know, like the yellow vests, trying to pretend like they were construction workers and not ICE. I saw one where a lady was just observing, but it was, I think, somebody that she knew, or maybe not, but it was a person that was working, you know, at the job site, and you got yoinked at the job site, and it was just a lady, you know, recording, and the dude whipped his asp, you know, really fast, which is that baton that extends, little metal baton, and he was ready to knock her out, man.
And
just for recording,
but the recording was posted, and apparently she was able to survive the incident.
Yes. Well, there was I think there was a second person recording that as well.
I see.
So one was closer, and one person was further away.
So you
and the person further away was the perspective I saw.
And is this an organization that's doing this, or just a series of individuals?
I mean, yeah. I think a lot of people are pretty fed up. I saw one Dodger Stadium. You saw that one already, right?
You think so, yeah.
Yeah,
from LA.
I just got turned away at the Dodger Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Is there much connection between resistance to ICE and resistance to the homeless sweeps?
People are trying not to make the connection. I went and I saw the 4-H committee for the county. Luis Leo was on it, and he didn't seem very happy that I brought up ICE and that they could just pick off anyone, especially as often as you steal everybody's ID so they can't even identify themselves.
So is there still an active organization that's working to...
There is a solid network in Monterey County, yes.
Back to Wes White in a minute, but, a few minutes anyway. Here's a song from Rovix called This Is Not a Trade War, and he says Russia invades Ukraine and the U.S. imposes sanctions on Russia.
In February 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine. Whatever our views of the war, the justifications for it, the history behind it, etc., there are some things that we can all agree on, because they are incontrovertible facts of the sort that aren't open to interpretation. One is that the U.S. is a major supplier of most of the major commodities Russia also exports. Regardless of whether you think the sanctions on Russia are good or bad, there is no question that they have resulted in windfall profits for commodity investors, arms manufacturers, fossil fuel corporations of all kinds, agribusiness, and others. Another is that some of the most devastating environmental disasters in the history of civilization have taken place as a direct consequence of this war. Whoever blew up the pipeline committed a terrible crime against humanity. Whether we can agree that hundreds of thousands of Russian and Ukrainian men have sacrificed their lives in the service of imperialism of one form or another, in the service of oligarchs and arms manufacturers, in the service of the oil industry, who knows?
Tanks were rolling into Ukraine. The globe was horrified. There were calls for negotiations to heal this divide. Others called for sending missiles, armored trucks, and fighter planes, and for sanctioning the Russians to block their shipping lanes. As the slaughter went on, did
not take long at all for the war and the sanctions' first victims to fall. As the price of food skyrocketed, no fertilizer for the soil, any doubling price of oil. But fear not, world, as long as you can pay, you can buy all the things you need from the USA. By a freak coincidence, we've got these purple fields of grain growing, lots of corn and wheat, as long as we get rain in the commodity markets. Prices have quintupled, good time to tighten our belts, get extra fit and supple. Don't know about that pipeline, who made it explode, but now that you've lost your main source from where the gas once flowed, 4 or 5 times the price, we've got all of it you need and a whole lot of corporate greed. But fear not, world, as long as you can pay, you can buy all the things you need from the USA. And we've got your weapons too, in case you fear your neighbors or the Russians or the Chinese start rattling their sabers. You might as well be ready for when that time arrives. You want to stock your Air Force up with these F-35s. And if your country gets destroyed in the process of resistance, as you're picking up the broken pieces, if you need assistance, we can sell you steel, glass, lumber, and concrete in victory or defeat. Fear not, world, as long as you can pay, can buy all the things you need from the USA. Fear not, world, as long as you can pay, you can buy all the things you need from the USA.
For ICE, for the homeless, or for both?
For ICE specifically, for undocumented.
And what about, so for the homeless, it's the California Homeless Union is pretty much moribund at the moment?
Sure, if I'm even online.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I know that you actively do these video forays into different, whether it's in Santa Cruz County or up in Sacramento.
Well, yeah, and I have gotten notices. I guess I haven't gone to them. I went to one in Prunedale, and there was a couple of days ago, and I'm trying to remember exactly where, maybe yesterday even. But that was an all clear afterwards, so somebody else went there. But I do respond if I have the time, yes.
Uh-huh. I'm not asking about your participation. I know you take on a great deal of responsibility yourself, and I, you know, I'm appreciative that you do, because how else could I get my information since I'm spending all my time watching old movies? Well, that's not true. But, I mean, in other words, I don't have the mobility and energy and facility with the video journalism that you do. Or for that matter, the passion to do it and get out there and do it so much. So I'm not really, I'm interested in whether anybody is doing it. I don't care whether you're doing it or somebody else is doing it.
People are doing it, yes.
And that's
what you know, there is a solidarity network just like the ER. For Santa Cruz is for Monterey County.
For homeless people as well or not?
No, homeless has nothing to do with anybody. I mean, how many people do you get going to Huff?
At least 3.
Well, that's almost a handful.
I would say it's actually a little more, but, you know, I'm not going to make any big claims about the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization for all those who just tuned in don't know what we're talking about. These are groups concerned with civil rights of homeless people, documenting abuses in perhaps the vain hope that something will happen like happened in, oh, I don't know, Fresno in 2006, when the Kincaid case was successful and stopped the, well, or should we say slowed the Fresno sweeps for about a decade, so that encampments could form and maintain communities of a somewhat, I would say, wretched sort, but maybe they weren't so wretched. I don't know. I mean, you know, wretched in terms of material wealth, but perhaps community always has its benefits regardless of how wretched things get has been my theory, but you might know more about that because you've actually established, helped to establish a community, the flagpole community.
Yeah, and that lasted for as long as the law allowed, and then they changed the law.
Well, it lasted for as long as you were willing to keep working at it, and those who were working with you did too. And all that was, you know, I wouldn't say the law didn't do shit except eventually try to shut you down. You were the one, you and others were the ones who maintained it. So give yourself credit, or if you don't, I will. So there.
All right, yeah, I know for 6 months it went strong until they changed the rules. And, you know, no one can be on Lincoln Avenue, and that also meant the library, you know, and it's just, they came with at least a dozen cops, and everybody jammed, so nobody was coming back. I mean, nobody, come on now, we're in our works, nobody wants to get hurt.
Well, sometimes, as you've noticed in Los Angeles and across the country, people do come back, and that can happen. But, you know, the fact is that you did this, you and others did this at City Hall in Salinas, at the center of government, right next to Chinatown, in 2015 to 2016, over the winter. Am I getting the right time frame?
2016, from March to October.
So it was in 2016.
Yes. Yeah, because the lawsuit was from September to February when they put in a policies and procedures step 1 through 7. Don't worry, Judge, I won't hurt them. I'm going to do these procedures before they get swept, and that means they'll be housed first.
And that was from September of 2015 to 2002 to the early days of 2016.
Yes.
And that was not when the encampment actually happened. It happened subsequent months.
Yeah, well, the encampment was, you know, I guess probably July or August of 2015. That lasted for a good 6 months until March 22 or maybe 23. And we did a wall, linked arms, and blocked drivers from coming through.
Wow! So this was what, so the year what year did the flagpole community begin?
2016.
And what year did it end?
2016.
That's what I was thinking, and that was it. Didn't extend into the winter. It was mostly throughout the summer.
Correct.
And so when you mentioned this, you block people. I should mention to those who aren't aware.
That was during the last final days of the lawsuit. You know, our issue had been rendered moot since the city had come up with a plan that supposedly they were going to follow, that was going to take care of everybody.
The issue
was, they lied to the court.
Okay, now, what the issue specifically was?
That they said they would follow these policies and procedures, and they just went straight to step 7.
Okay, remember now, you're talking to someone who you assume doesn't know what you're talking about. What is?
Well, policies and procedures saying, like, they were going to post a notice, they were going to connect people with services, they were going to wait for the service providers to come out and assess people and find and connect people with services, waiting all that time, letting them stay there until they were housed. And then the people take all their belongings with them and leave the litter because everyone's a litter bug. And then, gosh darn it, we can clean up the area.
So in other words, you're talking about the security and community of encampments as emergency housing, if not probably created mostly by the people themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking about for those who are wondering. I mean, you and I, of course, know what we're talking about, and now perhaps others do too. So we began by talking about Rita Acosta. What's she doing these days?
Well, she's part of the Salinas SORT, the Salinas Outreach Response Team for the city. So she tries to connect people with as much services as she's allowed to. because the city actually is not really there to help people, but they do have, you know, some advantages. So she's constantly providing supplies to folks, trying to get them into services, housing, you know, programs, whatever, and then trying to advocate against sweeps still.
How well funded.
And she's got her own family that she deals with. Her man just passed away, like, last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been hitting hard.
Is this song a tribute to him as well?
No, just coincidental.
Uh-huh. So, do you feel that she has been compromised at all? Is she being paid by the city now?
Not enough to cover her rent.
So she's paid?
Because she's not really working. She's on disability. You know, she carries an oxygen tank around.
That's because, yeah, for her own survival.
To be able to breathe, yes. Yeah, her lungs are filling with fluid. She has lupus. She has heart arrhythmia. She, you know, yeah, no, she's on an oxygen tank when she's at home. She's got a little backpack one that she rides her scooter with, and she still goes and visits everyone and chats with them and checks on them, which is where the song comes around, because no matter what she's facing, she's always there for everyone else.
You know anything about the budget of this outreach team, how much they get a year, that sort of thing?
Not specifically enough for this program.
Okay. What's the situation with social get-togethers of homeless folks? How are they doing there? I mean, is there in Santa Cruz? I'm sure there are lots of social gatherings I don't know about, but the ones I see regularly have to do with Town Clock, Food Not Bomb, Saturday and Sunday on the weekends. And I suppose there are some services that church funded programs provide, like St. Francis Soup Kitchen here in Santa Cruz for weekdays. Now, I say this not because you don't know it, but because there might be a possibility that others who are listening don't. So is there anything happening in Salinas or the places where people gather in any regular way? Is Rita involved with any of this stuff?
Well, I mean, there are service providers. So in Salinas, there's Dorothy's Place and Victory Mission. There's a Chinatown Navigation Center.
And how would you describe these three service providers?
Sure. I mean, Dorothy's has a drop-in center. Victory Mission has, I guess, a drop-in center, as well as overnight stay for men, single men, unaccompanied. In the Navigation Center, you have to have a wait list. At least in Victory Mission, you can just show up.
What percentage of the homeless community would you say is given shelter by these three groups? Or maybe if you add others in, if there are others as well?
Well, I mean, the Navigation Center can hold 50. They're on the chopping block to not be refunded, so that means, you know, their program would end. That's 50 people right there, and those are all placed, so there's no walk-ins. Victory Mission has walk-ins. They have like 60-something beds and another 20 upstairs for program people. Dorothy's Place is just a drop-in center. The Share Center has 100-something people. That's a really long wait list. There are day programs. Interim has a couple of day programs, but you almost need to be, if you're going to be there regularly, you'd have to have a reason. Library's available.
But not during the night.
No.
Mm-hmm. So I'm counting about 260, quote, beds, although I don't know if that means real beds or mattresses.
Right.
On the floor.
Well, I mean, there again, the 150 is already spoken for in program. So there's a waiting list. It's not like people can, you know, they're not available. there might be, there is a little bit of transition, you know, like people do leave. So you could say maybe there's 4 or 6 beds, you know, up to.
So if you figure 260 people are getting shelter services of a kind, at least at any one time, and the population of Salinas is, what, over 100,000?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm guessing here. That's almost double the population of Santa Cruz.
It's almost 200,000 now.
Oh, really? Okay, well then, that's more like 4 times the population, or at least 3.5 times the population of Santa Cruz. What would you estimate? I know you've been asked this probably dozens of times, but what would you estimate the homeless population is in Salinas?
I think the last number was like 1,300 or something.
So we're talking less than 20% of the homeless population is sheltered by these 260 so-called beds / program services.
I'm not even sure the math is reliable for the formula.
Mm-hmm. But let's say it certainly ain't more than 25%.
There's probably at least... I'm gonna throw out there probably more like 800 rather than 1,300. You know, the because we had like 500 during COVID, the number was higher. But certainly a lot of people we don't know. But everyone that we were able to feed food for during COVID, you know, anyone who could have had a lunch, you know, said yeah, me too. You know, so anyone and everyone we could find. It was only about 500, and that was during COVID. But, I mean, I'll take the higher number. Of course, it works in our favor, you know, more pity. But, people are constantly getting moved around. They're, you know, if they're in a vehicle, they're getting towed.
It gives you some example, some idea of the need that's not being met is what I'm really looking at, because that, presumably, also takes its toll in emergency services, jail space, and other things, which I would also ask is any sense of the number, of the percentage of the population in jail that's homeless?
No, there was a guy from the sheriff's office looking for $5 million for doing a reentry program 90 days before they get out. And of course, all that $5 million will go to them, not the folks being released.
Uh huh. Yeah. Ain't it always the way?
Well, I mean, if you ain't alive on paper, you don't deserve any paper.
Definitely.
Where's your contract? Oh, you came without a contract? Well, then you get nothing.
That's un-American. I would know that. Yes.
That's about fair and competitive as we're ever going to get.
So, anything in the cards coming up at the Salinas City Council, as I would probably call it?
There was a gal that was rushed by security, and he injured her, tackled her, and body slammed her, and injured her leg pretty hard. And I mean, you know, the businesses hate him, and it's like, but where else are you gonna go, dude? You know, so they stick around, and the animosity builds, and more owners, you know, want to be more violent.
So what's the name of this person who was injured?
I do not know the name.
Any organizations that you would refer people to who are sympathetic to addressing these problems, or at least agitating about them?
CRLA, maybe.
CRLA is?
California Rural Legal Assistance.
Are they still funded?
Yeah, at the moment.
I probably could go on dredging up questions like this, but we began with Rita. Any concluding comments? Are you likely to see her in the course of your next week's activities?
Possible. We have similar friends, so we've been visiting, you know, and who knows, maybe we'll cross paths. She's going through a lot. Like, I don't know, she set up a funeral, going to it. I haven't even really heard. So that's a lot to go through, though. I mean, you know, family issue is definitely a priority.
Fair enough. And if people want to tune in on your video work, which includes not just homeless stuff, but also other stuff, John Doe 13K is the YouTube channel to go to, right?
Yes. Yeah, two words. John, J-O-H-N, Doe 13K, D-O-E, 13K.
All right. Well, thank you, Wes. Don't hang up because I want to talk with you for a moment. But keep it up.
All right.
The final song in Aerobics episode 16 of his A Musical History of the World, or History of the World According to David Rovics, is introduced with the sentence, Georgia State Police kill an activist named Tortuguita in a hail of bullets for trespassing. Name of the song, Tortuguita's Playlist.
In January 2023, Tortuguita was killed in a hail of bullets fired by Georgia State Police while inside a tent. Tortuguita was part of the movement that set out in 2021 to stop the construction of what they dubbed Cop City, a massive police training camp to be located in the outskirts of Atlanta. As has happened so often in recent decades in the U.S., authorities have been charging protesters with terrorism or normally minor offenses like trespassing. The militarization of policing, as well as the use of wildly disproportionate punishments for traditionally minor crimes, is classically on display around the Cop City fight in Georgia. I wrote this song after Tortuguita was killed, and I heard from a friend of theirs who shared a Spotify playlist with me that was created by Tortuguita, who was a fan of my music.
Once it was Muskogee, then a forest prison farm. Though the city council said the woods should not come to harm, they voted to preserve it, but their vote was overturned in favor of Cop City, the name their project earned. Local people opposed it, opposition grew. Folks keen to defend the forest, Tortuguita did too. From food not bombs in Florida to a tent beside a tree, just outside Atlanta, in an adopted country. And I'm driving down the road through the Georgia mist, listening to Tortuguita's playlist. They began construction in 2021, protected by SWAT teams with armor and guns. The mayor said trespassers were terrorists. The resistors were afraid things might go like this. And I'm driving down the road through the Georgia mist, listening to Tortuguita's playlist. Said call off the armed raids. With that going on, mistakes could be made. Then one winter day, the forest was filled with a hail of bullets. Tortuguita was killed, and I'm driving down the road through the Georgia mist, listening to Tortuguita's playlist. Bullets shot into a tent. They don't want to say it, but that's how it went. The Georgia police answering straight to the governor's mansion, head of the state. And I'm driving down the road through the Georgia mist, listening to Tortuguita's playlist. Thank you. driving down the road through the Georgia mist, listening to Tortuguita's playlist.